This is the Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie. Thanks for listening. Due to the coronavirus lockdown and the general recognition that these are indeed the end times, we're releasing all sorts of unscheduled, unannounced episodes of this podcast. So please make sure to subscribe right now at reason.com/podcast or Apple, Google, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's the only way you won't miss a single episode. And today we've got a great one. I am joined by my Reason colleagues, Matt Welch and Brian Doherty, and we're going to discuss the steaming hot news that Representative Justin Amash, the Libertarian congressman from Michigan, is running for the Libertarian Party presidential nomination. What does that mean for the LP, for presidential politics, and the future of the nation? We're going to be talking about that right now. Matt Welch and Brian Doherty, thank you for talking to me.
Thank you, Nick.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So let's get to it. Matt, Amash is running. You talked to him last night on the telephone. What led to his decision to pull the trigger after kind of playing Hamlet, on Lake Michigan there for, 1,000 years?
For a really long time. I would like to tell you the answer to that question, but instead I should confess a journalistic failure slash also kind of remind people or introduce them to the notion that the congressman, with all of his virtues and vices, keeps it really close to his vest. So I can reasonably speculate that what happened is he's been thinking about this for a long time and had expected to make the decision earlier, but then coronavirus hits and kind of bamboozled the whole situation. And I would presume, and again, this is speculation, that at some point the coronavirus response in the federal government itself became more of a prod to jump into the race because the Congress is just like, oodled out nearly $3 trillion over the last six, 7 weeks.
They're just getting warmed up, right?
And the process, and he's really, really big on the process. Follow his quotes anywhere, and you'll see the word process constantly. He hates the way the Congress does its business and wants to restore legislative branch power of the purse and basic responsibility. And so everything about this process is everything he hates about Washington and also might be the plant the seeds for some future political rebellion in the same way that the financial crisis did. So I think that that might have gone into it as well.
Okay. So does this mean that he is
Nick?
Yes. Brian,
I have something I want to add to that. One very rational reason that that the congressman waited so long is that there was really nothing for him to gain by coming in any earlier, unless he really liked the idea of having to show up to, dozens of LP state conventions back in the old days when people got to meet each other. He didn't really need to do that because the unique aspects of how the LP selects its presidential candidate. There are no binding primaries. There's nothing that happens prior to the convention, if that happens at all, by which he has to win anyone's attention or love. And he's a guy who already has the attention and love of lots of libertarians. So really, I think he didn't enter earlier because he didn't have to.
Yes, that's an important point.
We'll get to some of the mechanics about the LP convention, which is scheduled to take place in a little less than a month. But first, Matt and Brian, what is the essence of his presidential platform?
Well, it's, I think, not really all that different from how he has governed. So he's someone who thinks that we should declare war and preferably actually not be in wars in the first place. He's a hardcore anti-spending constitutionalist conservative libertarian and has been forever. But the pitch that he's making, and he made this in his July 4th Washington Post op-ed when he declared independence from the Republican Party, is actually, and I'm not saying this gratuitously, is actually similar to some of the points that you and I, Nick, made in our book, The Declaration of Independence. And I mention this because he talks about how there's a much larger portion of the population who are currently unrepresented by politics, and that he thinks And he said this when he did an interview with Catherine Mangu Ward, our colleague at LibertyCon in January 2019, that the pitch to those people is, yes, constitutionalism, limited government and all that, but it's also that that respecting the and restoring the process of good governance is a way to respect people's kind of diversity and different sort of political and personality profiles in a way that current politics does not get. So I would expect his pitch to be a lot in that direction, that there is not quite a silent majority, but just tens of millions of people who can be lured back into the process because the current two-party system of the last diehards don't represent them and is actively alienating to them.
It's, according to Gallup, about 40% of the population identifies now as independent, and Joe Biden, the Democratic primaries actually showed lower than expected, outcomes, turnout. So, and Trump, is stuck at, 45% or something. Like he can't get above 50% with an approval rating, and his actual vote totals will be smaller. So there's certainly a lot of alienated people. Brian, do you have a sense of, what is beyond kind of respecting people's individualism and their own personal definitions of the the pursuit of happiness, and as Matt is emphasizing, a belief in good governance, of following processes like declaring war when you go to war and passing, spending legislation you can pay for. What else do you see as the essence of Amash's presidential platform?
What I want to stress, which will be interesting for those who don't follow the LP too closely, is the things that Amash, as he seeks their nomination, does not stand for. And these are some things that, while they're going to be great for him in the general election, should he win the party's nomination, are actually going to be a little bit troublesome for him on his way to get the nomination. The things that Justin Amash is not campaigning on, for example, include things like dismantling the entire federal government, which a somewhat popular libertarian candidate Adam Kokesh is standing for. Another thing he is not standing for is insisting that the federal government should do nothing at all to help Americans who are being crushed by COVID restrictions. He has been out there saying that there should be a role, a different role than the way the government's been doing it, by which financial aid should be gotten directly to citizens who need it. And that's something that many libertarians within the party just think, no, that's a no-no. The government should not be spending money to help anyone with anything. So there's all sorts of things that are going to make Justin a great candidate in the general election that are actually going to be barriers he's going to have to overcome to win the affection of the libertarian delegates who have to pick.
Let's talk about what the other LP candidates are saying. I'll go to you first, Brian, and then Matt. I want to get a sense from you as somebody who has been up to your elbows in the nominating processes over the past couple of LP conventions, whether he can actually win the candidacy. But Brian, you did a piece on this for Reason. What are the other LP candidates saying about him?
It's interesting. They were all super nice about it. And this is a really funny contrast. Matt broke the story on Reason about the fact that Amash was definitely in the race. And in his story, he quoted some things that one of his leading competitors, Jacob Hornberger, who's a sort of long-term libertarian educator, he runs this group called the Future Freedom Foundation. He's been kind of a front runner so far. Prior to Justin actually entering the race, Hornberger was super negative about him. He was a five-part series, as Matt pointed out, in which he was griping about how awful it is that he was sort of teasing the party and he wasn't in there fighting and he wasn't going to the debates. However, when I reached out to Hornberger for comment after it was official, he was super nice about it. You can see his quote from last night in my story. Just, yes, I welcome the competition. It's going to bring great attention to the party, all these things, which are very much true. So it's interesting that lot of the negativity that was—
His series, Jacob Hornberger was calling him the interloper.
Yeah, LP interloper.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. But it was interesting that as soon as it became real, Hornberger kind of became a more polite politician about it, and said some things that are very true. It definitely is going to bring a lot more media attention to the race. So I was a bit surprised about how nice everyone was about it. Sort of the saltiest thing anyone said to me last night was Joe Jorgensen, a woman who had been the LP's vice presidential candidate back in 96, was very negative about how long he took to enter. She was sort of saying that this shows that he's not really out to help the LP. He's sort of in it to use the LP for its relatively easy access to 50 state ballots. And I think there might be something to that. And I think that is something a lot of libertarians who are very very mindful of their team and building up their team. They don't care that much about, oh, maybe we'll get 4% of the vote. And that's great because it's more than we've ever gotten. But if it doesn't benefit and grow the party long term, they're not that impressed. So that's going to be one of the things he's going to have to sell these people on, is that I'm not just in it to run for president. I'm not just in it for me. I'm in it to help this party grow.
Brian, you did not talk to the guy last night, but about a year ago, one of the declared candidates referred to him as an asshole and in various other sailor talk that we try to forswear in official Reason podcasts and conversations. Who was
that? Yeah, that's Mark Whitney. And I meant to send this to you on Slack, Brian, but a longtime LP hand sent me a note saying that he thinks that Whitney is dropped out and backed Judge Jim Gray. Hopefully that's true, because then I'd be breaking it here instead of false, in which I'd be spreading disinformation.
Coronavirus of LP political reporters, Matt Welch.
Mark Whitney was trying to shock jock his way to the front of the line of the long presidential slog, and it wasn't really working. So that also might explain some of it.
Okay. So, well, yeah. Yes, Brian.
I was going to say, yeah, and actually the Whitney thing was said, that I quoted, was said just about a week or so ago in a candidate debate that the Kentucky LP had hosted. And he was very angry about the thought of Justin entering the race, and expressed it, as you said, in rather vulgar terms.
But I should say, Nick, that a context for this LP race, right? Yeah. If Amash is the nominee, that's the fourth consecutive nominee who is an ex-Republican elected official.
Right.
And there is a feeling within the party, I wouldn't call it a majoritarian feeling, but it's a strong feeling that's palpable everywhere, that is not unlike, if you can pardon the analogy, the way that Democrats in New York City felt about the mayoral office around 2013 or so, which is to say, Democrats are like, wait a second, this is a Democratic city. How come we can't have a Democratic mayor? And so they'll even vote for some, you know, person like Bill de Blasio. So there's the primary competition thus far, which, again, all primaries and caucuses are non-binding. Mm-hmm. And the entire decision is made up at the convention, the nominating convention. But the process so far has been what I've likened to a competition to represent the libertarian wing of the Libertarian Party. Jacob Hornberger's kind of a campaign leading message has been basically about that. You know, let's have a campaign of principle for the party of principles. Let's get back to brass tacks. And so Amash will be going against those kind of headwinds to some degree. On the other hand, I think, and I'd be curious to hear Brian's perspective on this, but that basically he's the highest wattage potential nominee the party has ever had. The only other person, I mean, it's kind of hard to say with David Koch's vice presidential run, because he had a lot of money and was, I guess, sort of famous. But Ron Paul in 1988 would be the only other person, I think, who could come close to stature within the libertarian movement. Even Gary Johnson, who had great stature in the libertarian movement and was like a lot of people's first choice, I think doesn't come as close to Amash. So, yes, there's those headwinds and this kind of feeling. Then again, he's got some star power. And for all the interest within the LP presidential race so far, you can't really say that anyone else has anything comparable.
Brian, go ahead.
Yep. I was going to say, I wanted to hit home the point that Matt was making. It's helpful to remind people that, you know, in 2012, Gary Johnson ran for the LP. He did incredibly well for them, nearly historically well at the time. He decided to run again in 2016. He's a guy who'd been a Republican governor. He did not win the nomination on the first ballot. Like, the outside media looked at this and thought, of course he's going to win. They were treating him as the nominee months ahead of time, and he did indeed win eventually.
Talk about what did he have to do? The LP has about 1,000 delegates, or roughly 1,000 delegates, who are in a room and they decide right there and then who is the candidate. What happened to Gary Johnson? What mountains did he have to climb, Brian? And, you know, what is your best sense of how that's going to fare for Amash?
Yeah, they're the same mountains that Amash is going to have to climb. One is the notion that even though Gary, you know, had been their candidate 4 years before, he still didn't feel like a lifer. He didn't feel like, you're a guy who's been with us. You're 100% libertarian. So he still had that sort of aura of, you're an interloper. You're an ex-Republican. You're not for real. And he compounded that problem by insisting that he get a vice presidential candidate, Bill Weld, who was also a former Republican. So there's that problem, the sort of like, you're not really one of us problem. And secondarily is policy stuff. Neither Johnson nor Amash are the types who, you know, as I said earlier, are going to campaign on, let's abolish the federal government entirely. You've got a guy, Adam Kokesh, who was running on that.
And succession,
taken
right?
Pretty seriously.
Kokesh is a big push on succession, right? Secession.
What does that mean?
Does that mean that like every state should secede or...
you should get him on the podcast. He's got a very interesting book.
Yeah, he's not on the podcast. I'm asking you, Matt Welch.
You
can't define it, can you? It's kind of a fuzzy category.
Go, Brian.
I'll try. And I there is a little danger in putting words in his mouth. Here's what I think he's trying to do politically. There's a certain aura of right-wing populism that kind of moves in and out of the Libertarian Party. A lot of it was attached to the Ron Paul movement. They're the types who don't necessarily want to say out loud that there's certain things that the government should never do, whether it be, you know, restrict immigration or stop people from using drugs or whatever. So they sort of compromise by sounding libertarian, but also not turning off these right populists by saying, well, the federal government shouldn't do it. But if you guys all want to get together in a locality and not let gay people marry and not let brown people in, like maybe that'd be cool. And I sort of feel like Adam is trying to get some of those people in his tent by saying no federal government at all. But the states and the localities maybe can do whatever we want. Jacob Hornberger actually in that Kentucky debate really pushed back on Kokesh about this. And he said, and I think I agree with Jacob Hornberger on this, that Kokesh formula is really a formula for 50 tyrannies. It's like you're not actually creating a libertarian world. You're just creating 50 different really crummy governments doing terrible things to people. And that shouldn't be what libertarians are about.
Okay,
like,
so
federalism has a role to play in libertarianism, but libertarianism is not just federalism.
And certainly Amash is not going there. As Matt pointed out, he was carping less. When it came to the CARES Act, $2.2 trillion spending bill that passed a month ago or whatever it was, he was not necessarily saying there should be nothing, but rather that whatever money goes to individuals. It doesn't go to businesses. It doesn't go to nonprofits. It doesn't go to government agencies. Matt, what is your read on a first ballot? Is Amash likely to get 50% of the vote, which is what he needs in order to become the nominee?
Really hesitate to make predictions about this. Herded cats. Well, part of it, the issue is that it's unclear how the Libertarian National Convention, which is scheduled 22 days from now, is going to take place, right? It's scheduled
because it was scheduled for Austin, Texas. The hotel that they were in was like, hey, you know what? We're shut down. We can't host you, right?
They said that on Sunday, all of a sudden. Yeah. And both Austin and the state of Texas have various rules about gatherings. So the Libertarian National Committee has a meeting on May 2nd, this Saturday, to decide the fate of the convention. And it's are they going to do it by Zoom, which is what the Green Party has done with their nominating convention, which I think is in July. Are they going to, in fact, have it from May 21st to May 25th? The nominating process is very interesting and unique, as Brian never tires of explaining, which is that, yes, they do it all in a room, but they do it in a series of ballots until someone gets 50% of the vote plus one. And so you lop off the lowest straggler from the previous round and you keep going. Some of the elections in past history have lasted many, many hours, I think even days. The vice presidential one last time, as Brian alluded to, super close. Larry Sharp, who people did not know at all, came within an eyelash of beating Bill Weld, who's like the most famous person up until then who'd like ever run on a Libertarian Party ticket. So all that is to say, I think Amash will get it. I think that Jacob Hornberger has a lot of popularity in the party and was sort of craning his neck in that direction. But there had been nobody fully kind of activating the pragmatist block. And by pragmatist, I don't mean that they are ideologically pragmatic, but they're in terms of, just of tactics.
Somebody, yeah, somebody who has name recognition and can get a million or 4.5 million.
The type
votes.
I mean, Gary Johnson did win the nomination twice. Bill Weld actually won. I mean, there's some arm twisting there.
Yeah.
Actually won. So the people who backed those guys, and Gary Johnson has responded very enthusiastically already to the mm-hmm. Amash announcement. The people who backed them have been looking for somebody, and they were not coalescing around anyone. Judge Jim Gray's entrance was an attempt to excite them.
Right.
They will be all in for Amash, I predict. And that's a pretty large number of people. So I think that he will probably win, but it's, you know, but they might torture him a little bit and say, it, you know, it's like the Baseball Hall of Fame vote, Nick. Like, I don't want this to be unanimous. So he might be, right. he might be stalled one round just to teach him a lesson.
You know, without going off topic, but I'm about to, Matt, the other day I was looking up Rogers Hornsby. It was just his birthday. He only got into the Hall of Fame on his fifth ballot. So, yeah, let's talk about the likely impact on the national race. Now, Gary Johnson and Bill Weld in 2016 pulled 4.4 million votes, 3.3% of the popular vote. That was more than enough to swing things. Brian, how do you think Amash stacks up, you know, in terms of his ability to really influence or chart big numbers in the popular vote, especially in the Midwest, which everybody, you know, is looking towards because that's where Hillary Clinton went to die as a presidential candidate in 2016.
Prefacing this with, I never thought that Donald Trump would win, so my prognostication record in these times is bad. But here's what I'm feeling. I'm feeling like the sense of urgent division on the part of those who either think Donald Trump is the savior of the country and the part who think that he is literally going to murder the country if he gets four more years is so severe that I feel like Americans are going to be less inclined. Those who want to vote at all are going to be less inclined to do the old throw away your vote by voting for someone who can never win thing. So if I had to guess right now, I will think that Amash is actually not going to do even as well as Gary Johnson. And this is not a sign that he is a worse politician or a worse libertarian or a worse campaigner. I just think he's in an environment where people are more like teeth-gnashingly, blood-curdlingly frantic about the notion that either Trump has to win or Trump cannot win.
Okay, Matt, what's your read of things?
To agree with Brian, the 2018 midterms, which were the most heavily participated in midterm elections in 100 years in this country, mm-hmm. were absolutely brutal on all third-party and independent candidates in ways that far exceeds the usual, let's just lop off one-third of their pre-election day polling support, which is generally the rule. Like, people weren't coming close. That, to me, speaks of some very, very serious challenge that Amash, the Libertarian Party, anyone has in this moment. And you see it already in some of the, you know, just kind of frantic disavowals of Amash by some of the people who were backing him and like funding him in his congressional race just a couple of months ago, especially the kind of never Trump conservative crowd. They're panicked that he might somehow affect the Trump versus Biden race. So that is a serious problem. And I think that the only way that that can be transcended, and this is a roll of the dice, and I wouldn't bet on it, is if somehow Biden's two big problems that I would call problems of he's like old and he's lost like 17 miles per hour off his fastball, will metastasize in a way that we can't currently predict. And his other problem is potentially the Tara Reid episode, right? That seems to be gathering some momentum and it might be turning off a lot of people from his campaign. So if that happens, and then also the other big if is coronavirus. like, you know, we're approaching a level of unemployment that is kind of unfathomable. I think it exceeds our grasp to really understand the amount of change that this is going to have on society in the near term, and the economy and a bunch of others besides. And so if you put that, put an energetic 40-year-old against a bunch of old doddering white guys. But
against two guys whose combined age is 150.
150. They're both.
And who cannot talk for more than 5 to 15 seconds without degenerating into a word salad that looks like the garbage bin at a Chipotle, man.
They both would be the oldest ever nominees of a major political party to run for president. Yeah.
You know, here is a question for you both to consider. My sense is that Amash's actual impact on the race may not be that he gets a lot of libertarian votes, but we're looking at a candidate like, you know, Donald Trump, who, you know, is, you know, cannot win a majority of the votes. I mean, nobody, even his biggest fans, don't suggest that, you know, and Joe Biden is sinking fast. He has an enthusiasm gap that is pretty manifest, you know, and he had weak support within the Democratic Party before the Tara Reid stuff, before, you know, his next appearance where he looks like he doesn't have all of his marbles. Do you think that Amash might, because he is a coherent philosophical libertarian and an actual sitting member of Congress, I mean, this is a presentable character, he might force each of these candidates to get their act together and also reach out across the aisle or beyond party loyalists? Because if 2016 proved nothing or proved anything, it was that, you know what, like you can't, you know, in a world where Democrats and Republicans' bases are shrinking, you can't expect party loyalists to, you know, to win you the election. Brian, take that first.
Yeah, here's a clue, and I haven't had my eyes glued on Twitter this morning. Has Trump tweeted some sort of belittling insult at Amash yet? If he hasn't, that's a sign that perhaps he might take the tack of, I'm going to just pretend this guy doesn't even exist. Of course, Trump does not have a lot of self-control. And of course, Trump might not even know this is happening yet. Goodness knows. But I would
Yeah,
I would say if a week goes by and Trump has not yet started tweeting belittling insults against Amash, it might mean that he's going to try to take the tack that I think you might see the media taking as well of, let's just try to pretend this isn't happening. I think it is pretty clear with the Tara Reid thing that the old mainstream media, as they say, is not eager to do things that are definitely going to harm Biden's chances. Wow. Biden's going to do that himself. So I do have a little bit of a fear that that they'll just sort of try to pretend that he's the man who isn't there. But it's a little too early.
I fervently believe I believe that Joe Biden will do nothing to attempt to appeal to any of Amash's perceived constituency. The month,
and not to the vast American middle.
He'll do some
those libertarians in the heartland, Matt, who just, you know, they're socially liberal, they're fiscally conservative. They want somebody, you know, at the steering wheel who's not a complete idiot.
I mean, that's the whole concept of the Biden campaign. Let's go back to some kind of version of normalcy that is semi-familiar. So, yeah, there's an implied centrism to that, but there's not going to be anything like, oh, you know, Amash is in the race, I better do this. Yeah. I better do this is going to be is I better do what Hillary Clinton do. Take Tom Steyer's money. $25 million of words or something like that, 15 maybe it was, in September of 2008, and send every, you know, Tom, Dick, and Jane in the press out saying that the Libertarian Party candidate is a moral monster who wants to pollute the environment, kids. So don't even think about, you know, doing something because you think it's cool or whatever, because he's really the worst possible guy.
So here's the question. Is this a break point, though, where, and again, I don't expect Amash to win. I don't expect him to get more than 5% of the vote, but he doesn't have to. But is this the beginning of a generational shift? Amash is, you know, multi-ethnic, or, you know, he's not a white American. He's not Anglo, you know, he's not an Anglo-American. His parents are from the Middle East. His father was a Palestinian refugee. refugee, for Christ's sake. He's anti-war. He's anti-drug war. He is, you know, pro low taxes and pro low spending. You know, Brian, do you think he's going to actually kind of change the way we talk about politics? Because at this point, he's up against two really old guys who just want to spend a ton of money on more and more stuff.
My fear matches Matt's, is that the conversation about Amash will become more about, hey, let's pick the most farthest reaching points on the libertarian spectrum that we know are going to upset a lot of people and hammer on them, especially for a Biden audience, right? If you start saying, this guy doesn't believe in stopping global warming by any means necessary, or this guy doesn't believe in raising the minimum wage to $30 an hour or whatever, that's going to be sufficient to scare anyone who might have been a Biden voter, especially younger ones, into going, eh, I may hate Biden, but I'm not down with not crushing the global oilocracy, and I'm not down with not raising the minimum wage. I think we're going to see libertarianism as a set of ideas face a lot of hostility, some of which is deserved in the sense that, yeah, lots of people out there don't actually believe, you know, with a hardcore libertarian message about certain things, even if I do. And that's going to be troublesome for them. I'm not optimistic that 2020, the COVID year, a Trump year, is going to be a year to successfully get people to rethink a lot of basics.
Ye of little faith. In 1980, you know, that was the election of a lifetime, right? Between, you know, with the twilight struggle of the Cold War and the balance between Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter, and the LP did very well in 2000. Matt, that was another big, you know, cataclysmic election, as was 2016. And you see third parties actually do pretty well.
Here's the problem, though, is if you look at, and granted, that's a small sample size, but look at elections since World War II or whatever that were razor thin, hotly contested, kind of emotional between the Democrats and Republicans, and look and see how well third parties did in that election and what happened in the election afterwards. 2000 was great for Ralph Nader. It was pretty pretty good for a lot of third parties. 2004 was an absolute wipeout. Democrats were not going to flirt with voting for a third party again. 1972 or 1968 was a very close election. We forget that now. George Wallace getting a sizable amount, winning states. 1972, there's just zero third party action. So I think that's more of the comp. Even I mean, like, when people get scared,
you're a downer, man.
I'm totally a downer. Every single person that has in the last 2 years in American political life made the loudest bellyachy noises about the size and scope of government have become moths on a windshield on a stormy night in the summer, driving through Nebraska at 100 miles an hour. They have all been crushed.
I would like to bring up a little anti-establishment paranoia here, something to keep your eyes on. We always talk with the LP about, oh, they have 50 state ballot access. And indeed, last time they did. They don't yet technically right now. They've got, I think, 36 states, and they're currently embroiled in a lot of problems regarding COVID, right? I wrote about this on Reason. Generally, they're required by law to go out and gather signatures on petitions to get on the ballot. And that is now impossible, both morally and legally right now. So the LP is involved in a lot of negotiations and in some cases lawsuits to try to get some of those ballot access requirements loosened or overturned because of COVID. So keep your eye. If I believe that the establishment was secretly out to crush the libertarians, I'd keep my eye on that and see if maybe some of these states are a little hard-ass about this and go, no, you know, we're not going to actually let you on the ballot this year for such and such a reason.
Okay.
And I think that's something to be a little nervous about.
It is definitely nervous-making. As a final exit question, I'm going to ask you guys, what should Amash's campaign theme song be? He's from Michigan. So it's got to be a Michigan band. That opens it up to Bob Seger. It opens it up to Ted Nugent. But I think he should pick the Stooges, Real Cool Time. Matt, Brian, what are your picks? What are your picks?
Wouldn't It Be Nice by the Beach Boys, just to try to bait Brian.
Okay. Brian, what about
Amash
you?
Amash is running against the wind, just like his fellow Michiganer, Bob Seger.
All right. Well, we will end it there. And by the way, he'll lose my vote if he goes with the Bob Seger song. I'm just saying, you know. This has been the Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie. I remain Nick Gillespie. I've been talking with Brian Dougherty and Matt Welch of Reason. We're talking about the Justin Amash announcement that he's running for the LP nomination. We will see how this plays out, and we'll be following it closely. Please subscribe to this podcast at reason.com/podcasts or at Apple, Google, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and also check out the other great Reason podcasts. Guys, thanks so much.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you.